Mount Cheehaw is my Everest, and the Coosa is my now. Alabama's where I was born and raised, and I think I'll stay a while.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. I'm here with Stuart Well this Monday morning, 34 minutes after the hour. Stay tuned, Midday Mobile, hosted by yours truly. And my friend Mike Ball from North Alabama will talk about a lot of state issues coming up. That's from noon to 2, so please stick around if you can. Joining us now is a pleasure to introduce my next guest. He represents the 3rd Congressional District of Alabama. Congressman Mike Rogers joins us on the line. Congressman, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Well, a lot has changed since we last talked a couple weeks ago, right before the election. Sitting here today, seeing what you saw and knowing what we know, which seems to be limited, what's your takeaway from Tuesday's election and everything that has happened up until this point?
Well, obviously, I'm disappointed. I'm a huge fan of President Trump and thought he's done a great job. And just feel like it's unfortunate in more ways than one that this global pandemic caused an end, or looks like it's going to bring an end to his presidency, because he did everything humanly possible. We have fared through this pandemic as well or better than any nation on the planet. And it's just unfortunate, but it's looking pretty bleak as far as our prospects. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that we're able to have some success in the courts. But it gives you great pause as a nation when you see an election happen of this consequence, and so many states can't seem to be able to get their act together. You know, we saw the lion's share of the states, you know, well over 40 states were able to get their votes counted and get them in, you know, before midnight, so that we had confidence that state had gone for either Biden or Trump. But yet you see this handful of key states with these large urban areas, which are Democrat controlled, for some reason can't seem to count ballots until they've got a week or so to come up with the ones they need to win. So it does cause some consternation, I know, with me and most of America, and it's frustrating, but it's the best, you know, apparently we have to deal with right now as a country. I'm going forward. We can make some corrections in the way that elections are run by the state to keep this from happening in the future. That's the thing people need to remember is under our Constitution, each state gets to decide how they want to run their election. And that's resulted in this mess that we've got. So I think we're going to have to do some things on a national level to try to prop up some states and give them some more resources as long as they meet certain criteria that this doesn't happen again.
Wasn't that the fear? We had Secretary Merrill on last week, you know, that there would be this impulse or this move to do more at the federal level. That's, you know, the slippery slope would say, well, federalization of elections, which is something I think a lot of conservatives want to avoid.
Yeah, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about providing economic incentives that if they'll meet certain criteria, we'll pay for it. I'm in complete agreement. I don't want the federal government involved in anything more than they have to be, because they have a good way of screwing stuff up. But having said that, if a state says, I can't get these mail-in ballots counted without more resources, then I'm willing to say, as a federal government, we'll give you more resources, but you got to start counting 3 days before the election or 2 days before the election or whatever to make sure that we know what the vote is on election night. You know, because the fact is that a lot of Americans feel like that because Republicans primarily vote in person on election day, that many of these big cities who are run by Democrats just waited to see what the count was on election night so they could spend the next 3 or 4 days coming up with the votes to beat that number. And so that's why I say we need to find some ways to economically incentivize these states and say, that's not acceptable. What do you need to be able to know on election night what the total vote is? And then give them the money to meet that objective. But no, I'm not federalizing anything.
Do you think under this, the political environment right now, that you can find enough members of Congress to do something like that? Because, you know, you look at what Pelosi had in mind with her last COVID relief package. I mean, it was essentially an overhaul, it seemed, of elections. Is that going to be palatable to have enough members to get it across the finish line?
No, the only way what I just described will happen is if the Republicans have control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency. The Democrats want to go the opposite direction. They want as much loose latitude as possible, which is what Nancy Pelosi was advocating in the bill you're talking about. She basically was wanting to federalize election, make them where we had universal ballot mail-in. So everybody is the registered voter gets a ballot in the mail, whether they're alive or not, whether they're incarcerated or not, you know, whether they moved or not, it goes to their old address. You can imagine what an invitation for corruption that is. So, and in fact, when you look at the rest of and the federal government, we're paying for all elections. I mean, she just had a bizarre piece of legislation that is never going to happen. So they're wanting to go the opposite direction of what I'm talking about. So they would never agree to what I just described. They liked the way that what happened last Tuesday happened, and that is that these big cities like Detroit and like Atlanta, like Philadelphia, were able to take several days after the election and see if they couldn't find enough votes to beat Donald Trump. So they don't want to do what I'm talking about. It won't happen unless we get Republican control of all three chambers. And it's happened. You know, it's happened for them. It's happened while I've been there. It's going to happen again one day. I don't know if it'll happen while I'm there. But it's the goal that I think we should be striving for, because, you know, if we don't have confidence in our elections, we don't have a democracy. And we begin the unraveling of this country.
Well, let's talk about further down ballot. There were some hopeful signs or some signs for you guys in the Republican caucus there in the House. So you look like you got to pick up a few seats. So it may or may not be enough to get you control, but at least the trend's going in a better direction.
Yeah, especially given that all the pundits and all the Democrat leadership were predicting we were going to lose 20 seats, and instead it looks like we're going to gain at least 10 and maybe as many as 12. So, it was a great signal that the American people are really put off by this Medicare for All, this Green New Deal, defund the police, you know, all the socialism that's coming out of the Democrat majority. And I feel very good, you know, about getting the majority back in 2 years because of this direction that we're on.
Well, let's talk about what might be in store in the interim. There is a lot of buzz out there that Nancy Pelosi is just not going to be handed the speakership. It is going to be tough for her. Her caucus is very divided. There's a lot of turmoil there. And we talked about this last time you were on, that she's faced the same situation that John Boehner sort of faced when he was Speaker of the House. But this time it looks like, I mean, there's a real possibility that she may not be reelected Speaker.
Yeah, there really is. And that's one of the silver linings in this nightmare we're going through, is to know that Nancy Pelosi could be thrown overboard by the people she's been promoting. I'm not in that conference. I don't know how it's going to work out, and I've learned never to underestimate her. But having said that, I saw what happened to John Boehner with numbers that were not as bad as what she's got, and they are livid right now. You know, you've got the non-socialist wing of the Democrat Party, which is not that big, that is just furious that all the liberal agenda items that they pushed, like Medicare for All, like the Green New Deal, like all the socialist legislation, specifically the election bill you just talked about, almost got them beat in their individual districts. I mean, they kept the majority, but barely kept the majority. And it's because of that hard left turn they took. Well, then you got Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her bunch, which, by the way, she added to her numbers in their conference, who are livid that these other people are turning their back on what they see as, you know, where the Democrat conference should be going. So, in order for Nancy Pelosi to get her chairmanship in the last Congress, or the current Congress for the last time around, she had to pledge that she would not serve more than two terms as Speaker, and that she would support this socialist agenda that this left wing had. Well, she did those two things. She almost lost the majority over it. Now she's got the rest of the conference mad at her. But the left wing is now mad because of the circumstance. And I think they're going to be looking for a change of leadership, and I don't think it's going to end with Nancy. If they throw her overboard, I think they'll throw Cindy Hoyer, and Jim Clyburn overboard too, because they kind of work as a team. And I don't know who will replace them, but you can bet it they'll be much more left wing than those folks.
Well, she needs the moderate Democrats, or what few there are, to hold on to power. She can't. Who knows how this could end? And we had one of your colleagues on last week who thinks it's going to have to end in some kind of compromise, that they'll have to find somebody they can agree on that isn't Pelosi, and that may be a Clyburn or Hoyer or somebody like that. But they got to have they got to keep it all together, because that margin is going to be so tight.
Yeah, and I don't think that compromise will happen until they put Nancy on the floor and she fails, and then I think you'll see them scrambling, because that would be a large embarrassment to them. I don't know how it's going to work out, Jeff. I swear for goodness, Nancy, if she says she doesn't have the vote, she may withdraw her name rather than be embarrassed on the floor in front of the world, and they may have to start looking for a compromise candidate. But it could be somebody like Hakeem Jeffries from New York, or Dan Kildee from Michigan. I mean, there's several other people that are ambitious in that conference that want to move up. John Larson from Connecticut. There's a bunch of them that could step in. I just don't see them moving Steny or Jim Clyburn up, because they're more moderate than Nancy is. I mean, Nancy's not a moderate. She's a liberal. But she is not liberal enough for the left wing of that conference. And so when you look at Steny and Clyburn, they're much more moderate than Nancy is.
Well, and I guess it's a pivotal time for those guys. And I know you're not in that caucus, but they...
And they're all 80 years old.
Whoever they pick, though, that's going to be send a message. That's the prevailing wisdom of the party, be it more progressive or moderate. And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yep, it is. And I got to tell you, I don't have a clue how that's going to work.
Well, in the meantime, in the meantime, you still got a lame duck session here. Is there anything we should expect coming between now and inauguration? I know there's a Georgia special election we got to be paying attention to for the Senate, but for now, it's still Pelosi's House and McConnell's Senate.
Yeah, but now that she knows that she's going to have a Democrat president to deal with, she's not going to make any major decisions. So I think you'll see a continuing resolution pushed off until at least February or March, so that she's dealing with a Biden administration instead of a Trump administration. I mean, we'll pass the NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act, but that'll be the only major thing that we pass, other than, again, a CR, because, again, she doesn't want to deal with Trump. She wants to deal with Biden. Now, she's still going to have a Republican Senate. You know, Tom Tillis has won North Carolina. They hadn't called it yet, but he's won that without a runoff. So we just got to wait on those two runoffs. And of course, Sullivan up in Alaska, they hadn't called it, but he's going to win that. So we just got to have one of the two Georgia seats. I think we're going to get both of them. But even if we just get one, we've got a majority in the Senate. So that will serve as a backstop against any craziness coming out of the House before it can get to the president's desk.
Are you surprised what happened in Georgia? I know it's your neighbor there to the east, that it was as close as it was.
No, I run around with all my buddies from Georgia, and they'd all been telling me Atlanta's been growing like kudzu, and it's just really overtaking a lot of the election processes over there. So I think Atlanta's going to cause Georgia to be much more purple than we've known it to be in the past.
Yeah, Republicans, I guess they've got to be on their game going forward, because now Georgia is, for better or worse, it's a swing state.
Yeah, we're going to have to do a better job, and I think you're going to see us do a much better job of turning out the vote in the non-Atlanta areas of the state. Because, I mean, still, you look at the state of Georgia, it's overwhelmingly Republican once you're outside Atlanta. So, and in fact, that's one of the things that I intend to be doing in this runoff. Me and a bunch of our colleagues going to be going over trying to help turn out the vote in the rest of Georgia so that we ensure that we keep those two seats. So, the Atlanta urban areas have gotten really good at cranking out their vote. We're going to have to do the same thing in the suburban and rural areas.
Yeah, and that's, I guess, the suburbs really probably caught me off guard, the Atlanta suburbs. It's not just the Fulton County and DeKalb County. It's also Cobb and Gwinnett. that are really going through some transition now.
Yep, it's a surprise, but we've been hearing it for a while, and we're gonna have to adjust our efforts accordingly to make sure that we can keep Georgia in the red column.
Well, Carson, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for making time for us.
Glad to be with you, buddy.
All right. That was Congressman Mike Rogers of Alabama's 3rd Congressional District joining us. It sounds like he's going to be involved in the efforts in Georgia. Georgia are really interesting because you have two Senate seats up. David Perdue, the incumbent, and Kelly Loeffler, who's appointed as an incumbent U.S. Senator. She faces Raphael Warnock. We knew that race was coming. I think not a lot of people expected Georgia to that two Senate races, but just one. But going to have to see. Can Democrats replicate their vote totals they did on election day? I don't know. But Republicans are going to have to do better if they want to keep those two Senate seats. We're going to take another timeout here. We'll be right back. This is Jeff Porshaw on FM Talk 106.5. Looking back again. Cotton on the roadside, cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich.